Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Onsite Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we have Emilio from Settler. I'm saying that correctly?
Yeah, saying that right.
Yep. Episode 27. So we were talking a little bit off camera, and as I said to Emilio, I think he will be the very first buyer's agent that we have had. So he's going to be bringing a little bit of knowledge and a bit of insight to his journey. He's a young gun just like myself and Nick. So yeah, Emilio, thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I know it's a busy time, start of the year. Everyone's coming back from holidays and it's a fucking, it's a bit of a whirlwind.
No, mate, thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out. It's there's always time for stuff like this. I think it's really important to just have that, I guess, take time away from what you do because then it reminds you of what's important as well. So it's cool.
Yeah. So talk to us, give us a little bit about, you know, I obviously said that you work for Settler, buyer's agent, but give us a little bit about, you know, what your role is currently at the moment and just a bit of a brief cap on your journey to get to where you are now. And I'll start elaborating a little bit further.
Cool. In terms of, I guess, what I do, it's helping the buyer, right? Put simply, everyone knows about sales agents and whether you love them or hate them, they do the job of selling a property. What we do or what I do as a buyer's agent is bring that power back to a buyer. And the reason being that that's important now is that it's so competitive and a lot of people are scared of overpaying. A lot of people use us because they're time poor or they just need help knowing where to invest because it's one of those things where a lot of people say, oh, invest in property. But it's just a very broad thing. Where do I invest? Where do I put my money? So, you know, we help owner-occupiers and investors essentially find a property and we do the searching, sourcing, negotiating. We do everything essentially. So that's the, I guess, a blanket overview of it. And mate, I kind of fell into it, if I'm honest. You know, I didn't grow up, I'm not, you know, a son of a real estate agent or, you know, no one in my family does it, if I'm honest. So it was one of those jobs that I fell into post my first career in as an athlete. And it was something that I kind of...
So did you have like a family friend that was doing it? Or how did what? You just literally found an ad and you were just like,
what happened was I was... So post...
Because I guarantee you the pay wasn't fantastic.
It was rubbish. It was horrible. And, I'll even speak about my first boss and I'm still mates with him now. And, you know, but again, it's an entry level
job. That's it.
But I post football, I worked at a cafe, one of my mates' cafes that he owned. I played with him at Brisbane Roar. And then from that was approached by a property manager. He was his own business. It was a boutique type property management agency. And he just said to me, look, if you get your license, I'll give you a job. I really like the way you speak and how you interact with people. And I was like, okay. I didn't really have, I guess, a thought process of what I was going to do post-football. I was a bit lost. And I went, okay. Took him up on the offer. I got my license and he gave me a job. And, mate, I'll say it was 50K a year. It's you know. But, again, it was like, wow.
It's no different than doing an apprenticeship or anything.
No.
Like that.
And, and I think
you got to start from something.
Correct. You got to start somewhere. And that's how I got into it. And then post that, bought my first property about a year or basically around that same time. Again, it wasn't a luxurious property. It was a 350K unit. And then I had my family and my wife's my fiance at the time, now my wife, her family reach out and say, oh, can you buy us some stuff? And I was like, yeah. And I found a lot of joy in that. And again, that's how I fell into it.
So you were just sort of helping them like without the tag or anything like that?
Correct.
You were just...
I didn't even know if it existed. And then, fast forward a couple of years, I came across someone that was willing to give me a role as a buyer's agent. And then... and then now I am where I am, and it's definitely a growing industry. We think, you know, when I say we, Simon and myself, we both think that this is what kind of the mortgage broking industry was in the early 2000s, where people were a bit unsure, not too, you know. But now, fast forward, it's crazy. Everyone has a mortgage broker.
80, I think there's like a statistic. It's like 80%.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, they go through.
Yeah. So, and look. You know, it was it wasn't the, I guess, the journey of me being as a buyer's agent. It took 5 years to get where I am now. It happened quite quickly to get into this role. But yeah, it was something that I didn't expect doing, but I can definitely say now it's something that I'll do for probably the rest of my life.
So at the start, were you selling like real estate at the time? You or you, or was the so first job in buyer's agent? Like
the first job. So the first job before I was a buyer's agent in real estate was as a business development manager for property management.
Yeah.
And so my role was to essentially sell the service and promise them all these things. Property management, and I feel sorry for a lot of property managers, it's a very thankless job. Mm. It's you're just putting out fires, right? Mm-hmm. Just a fireman, really.
Well, that's it. When the landlord's got an issue, they're ringing
it's all
you.
Issues, mate.
You know what I mean? They're not ringing you for good news. When your phone rings, it's always for something wrong.
And that was one thing that I found really tough because I was... Everyone wants to be thanked, right? Everyone wants to know that they're doing a good job. And even if you are doing a good job, it's always an issue. So it's like, geez, there's no honeymoon period here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even like there's a... And there probably is maybe a week where you sign up the landlord and they're happy with the fees and everything and the service.
Or you get them a release for better money. Like, correct. Yeah, this is great.
And then they get a tenant and they call up and they say, shower's broken. You're like, you give them a call. So I had a kind of hybrid role as a inspections officer / BDM / property manager. And
you were just doing it all, yeah.
Yeah, and it really taught me, I guess, from the ground up. And I think in real estate, if you wanted to be a sales agent or a buyer's agent, it's really important that you start with one of those roles because quite quickly you can forget where you come from and you can forget how important those roles are. So if I buy an investment property now for a client, property management is massive. So I need to know legislation. I need to know what laws are around certain tenancies or...
And it's constantly changing. I think there was a few laws that came in last year that would get massive game changes as well.
Correct. So it's important to have some knowledge in that because then post that, you can talk from experience, you can talk from knowledge. So, mate, that's how I started. It wasn't glamorous by any means.
Yeah. So you're obviously a really great communicator. I think that's, that comes with the role as well, But talk to us a little bit because it's even in our industry and I'll just wind it back. I always talk to a lot of the guys that are coming up through the ranks, if you want to call it for what it is, climbing the corporate ladder or whatever.
Yeah.
I always jokingly say to them that as you go up in ranks, doesn't matter what it is, you can be in your occupation, whatever it is, it becomes less and less about the physicality of what you do and more about how you can manage people and communicate your skills, because how you speak to, say, someone like myself wouldn't be how you would speak to your property manager or wouldn't it be how you speak to your seller and, as you'd have 1,000 contacts and different people that you'd have to speak to. So your journey to become a great communicator, how did that start? Did you just get that from your parents? Was that something that you've always sort of worked on? Were you just naturally gifted like that? Or have you tried to really just understand that?
I probably, fortunately enough, was born with it. I do have the gift of the gab, if you want to call it that. Dad's a great communicator. Dad was a salesman in his own right. He was selling catering equipment. He had his own business as well as a bread vendor and he had to bring on clients and stuff like that. Mum loves a chat. So I was born with it. But I think, like you said, with different people, you have to kind of change the way you speak and how you portray information. So for me, the one key bit of learning, and I'm still learning now, is different personality types. If someone's really direct, you have to be direct back because then they respect that. If someone needs a bit more hand-holding, you really have to go deep and ask a lot of questions as to why. But again, it's just by experience of going through that with certain people. But I grew up quite quick. I grew up in a family where my brother's autistic, so I was almost like the second dad because he's a couple of years younger than me. So helping with that, because dad was very busy at work, so mum needed a lot of help. So helping with that and just knowing how to... Well, growing up around, I guess, a lot of older people, it just forced me to be more...
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
more... I have to be a lot more onto it and understand what I'm saying and how I'm coming across. But I come from a really good family where, you're very respectful. You say your please and your thank yous. And that just carried on. And then because I played football professionally and I moved away from home at 16...
Mm-hmm. So where did you, when you moved away, where did you go?
I moved to the UK, so moved at 16 and...
with family or you just went...
By myself.
Oh, okay.
Mum didn't want me to go, wanted me to finish school. Yeah.
So it's part of like some sort of program or how did that...
No, so it was the Nike Academy, right? And basically Nike had this thing set up where it was called Nike's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
And what happened was it was a chance where you could go into an academy that was fully funded by Nike to... basically another chance of getting a professional contract because the original way is you go to an academy, you sign for the academy, you go through the ranks, you come first team, whatever.
Yeah,
this was another way around that, so giving I guess, players another opportunity to get to there. So essentially, they had trials all around the world, and then it was fully funded. So it was where you had to get to the first trial, which was in Melbourne. And from, you know, they pick, I think it was like 1,000 or 1,500 players put in their resumes. They picked the best 64. And then from those 64, only one gets to go to the UK to trial again for, and that's the world trial, to then get into the Nike Academy, which was based in the UK.
Yeah.
So I did that. I got through the first one.
So you got picked out of Melbourne?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then got flown over, did the trial for 3 days, and then got into the global, did the global trial and won that. And then, look, there's no number on how many they could pick. They could pick two. But there was about, from that 64, it then dropped to around, I think it was like 50 or so. And then from that 50, if they only thought two were better than what they had, then they would pick the two. If they thought six were better, then six. And I think I was one of the six that made it for that. And they did it once every 6 months. So your position's always up for grabs. So if you're not performing in that 6 months, someone else comes in, they'll kick you out. But it was fully funded. So I did that and moved abroad at 16 and I was there for about a year and a bit. And then came back and signed my first professional deal back at in my hometown at Western Sydney Wanderers. And then that's how I got into the kind of football world.
And was it, you know, I guess you don't have to talk about it, but jumping out of that world, was it injury based or was it just...
It was a bit of everything. Like, it definitely life. Got injuries. I had a couple of like small knee injuries, like meniscal injuries. It wasn't like, you know, the career massive ending or anything like that. But one thing that scared me was the constant living out of a suitcase, especially in the A-League, right, in Australia. The money is not like it is overseas.
And no, 100%.
It's a bit like tennis, right? Everyone sees Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal and all the big boys. They're on the most amount of money. That's great. It's a bit like football.
Then if I guess it's like most things when you compare it. Like,
there's no in between. Yeah. Like, you're either on a lot of money or you're not. And I could also see what did my life look like after. And I had this kind of, this feeling of inertia. I didn't know if I wanted to continue doing it. And even now, I always say, if I got offered a really good deal, because I still play semi-professionally, like if I got offered a really good deal now, would I do something? Would I do that again and leave what I've got? No.
You wouldn't?
Not even if it was more money than what I'm on now. Because for me, I get scared about, well, once that's over, then what?
Yeah. Then you got to go back to doing...
Because it's just so... It's so... I guess short-term focus, because it is, you've got a small time frame of being an athlete. I mean, that's not just football, it's rugby league, whatever. So, you know, you make a lot of money. Even if you're fine, then what do you then have to offer after that? And a lot of people find themselves very lost, and that kind of scared me, and I just put myself, you know, in that position. Fast forward, let's say I do this until I'm 35. Then I'm starting from scratch. I'm an associate real estate agent.
And I guess how many players can really last to that age as well?
Luck. That's luck with injuries. And again, it doesn't matter how much you look after yourself. So many things out of your control. So there was that feeling of, I want to offer more to society. And not saying that the athletes don't. They do. They offer entertainment. They make people happy. But I wanted to just do a little bit more.
And did you know your fiance at that point?
We've known each other since we were a lot younger, and then we didn't get together until I was basically
just got out
of football.
Because I was just wondering if maybe that was, you know, if that obviously, because I know there's a lot, I've spoken to a lot of other guys that are in that sort of field, and that when they're in relationships as well, that's a massive thing as well, because you're all on the road all the time, you know, you can't really settle down that well. And
constantly,
you know,
moving cities.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't, and that's why being an athlete, although it's one of the coolest jobs in the world, it's one of the hardest, because you've got no Christmas, especially in football. You've got no Christmas. Your public holidays, you don't take off. You're an entertainer. You're in a circus, right? And the only time you get off is off season, and then you're back in. And again, it's very hard to find a woman or even a man, that can support that. And again, a lot of the times they have to be there to look after the family. Then it's like, oh, we got to uproot our lives and go somewhere else for a year or two if everything goes well. So I met my now wife after that, where we rekindled and we got to know each other. And that was probably the best thing, because I was so lost. I didn't know what to do. Post-football, I just didn't know. So I was happy to work in a cafe just to start fresh. And that's how it kind of started from there.
Yeah, no, sweet. And that would have, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but moving abroad, 16, I guess the whole journey to get you to Melbourne as well, like the discipline aspect, you know, I don't know a lot of 16-year-olds or even 17, 18-year-olds, even 20-year-olds that have the discipline to, you know, because there would have been no parties. You know, there would have been getting up early, just, you know, 2-a-days, 3 days, whatever it is. Like, you're just in the fucking zone.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing it, you know. But talk to us about how did, like, because you were 16, you were technically still at school. Did you have to finish school? Like, how did that all work? So you know what I mean? Like,
I just started year 11 and... For whatever reason, I was kept saying to my parents, like, oh, I can't see myself finishing school. I just can't see it. I just don't, can't visualize it. And my mum's like, well, you're finishing school, so nothing's changing.
Yeah.
This all happened very quickly. So I remember the trials were like, the first one in Melbourne was on March 14th. And by, I think it was June or May the 1st, I was already living abroad. So within the first 6 months of the year, my life changed from starting year 11, you know, getting into that kind of ATAR mindset.
Yeah. So you never went back.
That was it. And my principal at the time said to my mum, let him go.
Yeah.
She goes, he's smarter. He said, and I'm thanking him for this, he goes, he's smart enough to sort himself out. If it doesn't work out, he can go and he'll be fine.
Yeah,
and
my mum was like,
oh, no, you only finished year 10. So
yeah.
I went straight overseas and that was it. I finished school and would I let my kid do that? No, probably not. But my mum and my dad were like, you know, it's one of those things, it's once in a lifetime. And to be honest, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for, I guess, leaving school a little bit earlier.
And I guess, man, that's, you know, it was a similar sort of thing. It's the amount of guys that I've interviewed and spoke to that are really successful in their industry and they're given right. They've all got the same sort of common thing, you know. They weren't very fantastic at school. It wasn't really their thing, you know. You know, some of them finished, some of them didn't, but it was definitely never on their radar that they wanted to be A-plus students and go to university.
No.
You know, a lot of the most successful guys that I've ever met, hey, they're just like...
They're just... You know, to be honest, there's
no qualification. It's a personality,
correct. And that's the thing. Like, my dad finished in year 10. My mum finished year 12. And my wife's going to university and... One thing, I guess, and that I've learned in business, in same as what you've just said, is that, you know, it doesn't, that doesn't define you. Like for me, I was like, that's right. I can go to uni.
Yeah, 100%.
It's okay. It's not the be all and end all. And I'm not saying, you know, leave school early, but I had a specific opportunity that required me to make a decision, and I picked that and I stuck with it. And I'm glad I did. I don't regret anything. Nothing I did that I regret. And missing out on parties, I never got to go to a formal, didn't get to graduate with my mates, all that.
But just going back to that little statement of like you saying you didn't have to go to parties and stuff. Like for me, when I was like in the zone, like when I was still trying to build what I got now and that sort of stuff, it was never a case like if I missed certain things, I wasn't like, oh man, like I missed that.
Yeah, I'm
like,
spewing.
Like I wasn't like that.
Neither.
It just wasn't really like, you know, I don't even look back at it and really regret anything. No. That's just like me, like even now.
It's
like
a personality thing. Because you can see the bigger picture. Yeah. I think that, and there's nothing wrong for people who are enjoying, and everyone's got a different time frame.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Think for
yeah.
someone like yourself or me or people that I think are successful in their own right, kind of young and I guess quicker than others, is that they had that mindset from the start going, well, that's just a short-term little bit of fun. I'm after the long-term stuff. And that's what I'm always playing the long game. And that was the mindset even back then. So, you know, I get to enjoy myself now. Like I'm very lucky that I can, you know, go on holidays and that's how I enjoy myself. So, I did, to be honest, being in that kind of professional athlete zone from 16 up until, you know, 20, 21, I did miss out on a lot of, I guess, what you could say was the fun stuff. And, but again, I'm now living my life the way I wanted to live it.
Yeah,
so.
The way that you want to live it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this is actually going really well. All right. Wind the clock back a little bit. I feel like you're someone like myself where we don't really look the part.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have, as they would say, the experience doesn't show it in the face. But tell me about, because I know some of my battles, right, to get to where I am now. And even I'm still, you know, pushing uphill, like it's still, you know, especially in construction because it is a old industry.
Yep.
And you know, I have a constant battle with, you know, you almost have to sell yourself on the daily. And you know, so tell me, because there's a lot of guys that are listening that are young that are either, you know, they've started when they were 16, they're now finished, they're trying to do their own thing, and they're, you know, even if they're starting on their own, they're having those same constraints, whether they're starting up their own business like yourself or they're doing construction or whatever it is, it doesn't matter, right? What were some of the, I guess, moments in time or hurdles that you found along your journey, and how did you overcome those with dealing with, say, for instance, you go to David and Joanne's house and the first thing they look at you and they go,
oh, no, thanks.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm not getting this guy. Yeah, like I'm not, you know. All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode.
I think this goes back to me being in the athlete industry where if you're good enough, you're old enough.
Mm.
So if I'm 16, I'm good enough to sign a professional deal. You're in a change room with 35-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's how I live my life now. So I'll back myself. It doesn't matter if you're 60, 50, 45, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I've got something that I can offer that they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And they can have things that I don't have either. Mm-hmm. Like they don't. It doesn't have to necessarily be an age thing. Mm-hmm. But I hit that on the head. Like, look, I've done a lot younger. So I like to say I've lived basically a very quick life. Like I'm also married. I'm 20. Mm-hmm. I'm 26, I'll be 27 in September. You know, I've purchased my first property, I think I was 19.
Yeah.
Like, I moved quick, I lived out of home at 16. So yeah. I don't feel 26, I actually feel probably closer to 40. Yeah. But you
got the lucky genes of, you know.
Yeah, I know, I look nice.
Get the benefit, young, yeah.
But ultimately, like, you can't change people's opinion of you. If they think that you're young and that's a disadvantage, cool, I'm not going to change your mind. But if you're like to give young people a go and you think that, okay, yeah, I can see why maybe he's done what he's done already, then great. But ultimately you're always going to come up against that. And I think I'll always end up, but I actually like being the underdog because I've got nothing to lose. Whereas some of these older guys are solely relying on their one wood, which is I've got experience of age. But it's how do you define
give
experience?
Give it to me. I've got 15 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know. Big deal. Like, how do you define experience? I'm happy to say this. I missed out on a client signing up because I didn't have 20 years experience. I can't change that. I can't change when I fell out of my mum. I can't.
Yeah.
I just can't. Yeah. So if it was something else that I could change, I'd be a bit more pissed. I'd be like, I should have done that better. But I actually said to the guy, I said, mate, all the best. Like, I can't change that. I can't give you a reason as to why. So if that's what you're after, again, you could be doing something for 20 years the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly.
But someone's doing something right for 2 years the right way.
Yeah.
What's right? What, because they've had it 20 years? I don't agree with that. So if you're good enough, you're old enough. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, I've met men that are 19 and I've met boys that are 42. You know, and 100%. That's, you know, I that's what I've dealt with in my timeline. So it's like, I always, you know, if a guy's young enough and he's keen enough and he approaches me, that's more mature than the guy that's 42, that's been doing it for 20 years, you know, back in my day, like doing X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
So I always lean to the younger guy, always, you know, I'm not after the, and you're right. How do you define experience? That's actually a really good one because, like, for me, I don't define experience by a timeline at all. Experience is, you know, I guess when you're going under, you know, if you're going in for a surgery like medical, that's a little bit different.
100%. But, it's completely different. Unless you're a neurosurgeon or a heart surgeon, that's what I want to know. It's been 20 plus years. But I always say,
like, if a guy's cutting me and he's 16, I'm like,
different story.
Give me that guy.
But that's because you need the qualifications and to do that. And, you know, and that's why. And that's why they're paid what they're paid, and they're saving lives, right? We're not saving lives. Majority of what everyone does is we're not saving lives. So it comes back to, do they like you as a person? Do you have their best interests at heart? I'd rather give my trust in someone that's got my best interest at heart than give it to someone who's just been doing it forever and a day and probably doesn't care. And that's where I think that mindset's flawed, where it's about the amount of years you've been doing something, then that determines that you're better than someone. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
And I also look at age, like, you know, you're 29, I'm 26, and we're still in our 20s. You know, what have you done in that time? You know, you've built something massive. You've done something, you know, you've got two kids, you've got a wife, you've got your shit sorted. But like you said, you could be 40 years old and be, have not saying that it's a bad thing to have nothing to your name, but nothing to say, this is what I've done, right? Again, the only thing you can fall back on is I've been on this earth for 40 years, which is something that you couldn't even control.
Yeah, yeah.
So even that, that's great, but you didn't even do that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So yeah. I remember like in my early days when I was just, you know, rocking around, I remember selling myself like this would be late in the afternoon and the sun's going down, you're trying to win jobs, you're trying to do X, Y, and Z, you're talking to these people. I remember like vividly just saying to them, like blank out to their face, just like, I literally don't have anything to lose. Like, you know, I'll be here for 12 hours a day. Like, and I used to just promise the world to those people, like, just give me a go.
Because you have to.
Yeah. And I remember I was walking out. This was a fairly large, like, you know, back then, I think it was about a $300,000 job. It was like, fucking, to me back then, it was like 30 million. Like, I was like, oh my God. I remember walking out to the front. To the street, and the husband was next to me, and he goes, you know, he was like, oh, you know, thanks for coming, man. I really appreciate it, you know, but you just, you know, you're not really, you know, we just don't think that you're going to be able to do the job.
Right.
And I remember turning to him and just sort of saying to his face, I remember just saying like, I'll do it. Like, it's like, you put me on and I promise you, even if I lose everything, I remember pointing to my ute and trailer. I remember I was saying to him, like, I'll sell both of those and everything I've got to do the job.
Yeah.
And I just remember the husband's face. I so clearly, it was just like, he just looked at me and smiled a little bit. And he goes, oh, he said, Corey, I'll ring you. I'll ring you tonight. Sure enough, I got home at like 7:30 and he was like, yeah, no, we're going to do it. He's like, I spoke to my wife, and it was just like, I just remember in that split moment, it was like 10 seconds. That's how fast it was, but it felt like half an hour.
Yeah.
It was just in that split moment, he'd already made his mind up that he wasn't going to do it, and he was trying to let me down easy, thinking that I was just going to like
roll over.
And I just went, nah. Like, I literally put my foot. I remember telling Tamara at the time, like, we weren't engaged or anything.
Mm.
Like, so back then, there was nothing. Like, fucking, yeah. I had nothing. Like, literally, I had nothing to fucking lose. Yeah. I had a dog. And that was it.
Yeah.
And she was just like, oh, well, you know, let's go. Yeah, fuck it.
Exactly. And I think that's the one thing about being young that we can use to our advantage is that, we don't have anything to lose. The only thing we have to really gain is just experience. And then, you know, don't get me wrong. When I'm 30, 40, I'll be counting on my years of experience as something that I can have as someone younger. But as it is now, I don't have that. I can't. Yeah. So let's compare the comparables.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Is he willing to work as hard as what I am now? Mm. Is he willing to come out, or is she willing to do the same as me? You know, all those types of things. So, I think it's a benefit being an underdog because 100%. Nothing's expected of you.
Yeah,
which is a cool thing.
Yeah, that's it. All right, sweet. Well, yeah, that's some advice for you younger guys. Anyway, all right. Moving on, I do have some questions for you. All right, so now talk to me a little bit about. Some of these are gonna, you know, they're a little bit wooey in a sense, but what's along the journey to now, you know, you're still sort of in your journey. I'm not talking to someone that's 50 years old, that's done, that they're living over in Europe for 12 months a year.
Yeah.
Up till now, what's been one of the hardest decisions that you've ever had to make in business? Because it's a partnership. Like, what's the structure?
Yeah, essentially, he's a director and I'm underneath him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what's been the hardest decision that you guys have either made mutually? And, you know, talk to me a little bit about that. Like, is that something that, like, because everyone talks about the glitz and the glam of business and they see what they want to see on socials. I always word it like that. People only ever see what they want to see.
Yes.
All right? And socials, it's lovely. Yeah. Everyone's going to show the best fucking version of themselves and da-da-da-da-da, right? That they're going to. It's a highlight reel.
Yep.
But no one ever really sees the downfalls of business. You know, the low cash flow, the jobs not coming in, the market shitting itself.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And the mindset around that, you know, professional athlete, you've got obviously a rock solid mindset because when your body's pushed to the absolute fucking limit, the only thing that you're relying on is your mindset.
Yeah.
Right. But when you switch to business, is that something that you've brought into your business life with that mindset and that attitude and all that sort of stuff?
100%. Well, you know, keeping fit is the hardest thing because it's self-driven.
Yeah.
So that was something that you always had to do as an athlete.
Yeah.
And it's the same as now bringing in business.
Yeah.
Unless I'm out there building relationships and doing the job well when I get the opportunity to help someone, unless I'm doing the hard yakka, the next client isn't going to come in or a referral isn't going to come in.
Mm.
So I think
you ever had to drop client, like, you know.
Oh, look, the thing is, you know, dropping price, dropping pants and commission. Like, yeah, yeah. That's another thing too, and that's the hard thing. Do you drop commission? I'm against that. I think it's that is a race to the bottom.
Yeah,
because you need to also have a worth and know what you're worth of why you're worth that and someone else is worth less. There's always going to be someone cheaper.
Mm.
So trying to beat that, you're never going to beat it. I think the toughest decision was for me, I guess, just putting all my eggs in one basket into something that I didn't really know, which was this. And then every day is a challenge because you've got to get new clients and you've got to keep the current clients happy. And fortunate enough where we live in Brisbane and it's a great market and you know, you've got investors and owner-occupiers and it's growing. But it's also preparing for the bad times, and the bad times will come. It's you know, there's always going to be those peaks and troughs. So, but for me, it's definitely the consistency is the hardest thing because
as yourself, I personally, I've dealt with buyer's agents as well. Like we've purchased numerous properties now, and I've been on that other end of dealing with buyer's agents. And I know, I always joke to my wife, I always say to them, these guys, same as property managers.
Yep,
there's no off.
No.
There's no off.
No. Right? You guys, 8 o'clock, like, 9 o'clock, exactly. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
And switch it to my line of work, hence why I stepped out dealing with B2C.
Yep.
That's all you guys do is deal with B2C. Yep. You know what I mean? So exactly. I didn't like my phone ringing at 8:30 at night or 9 o'clock.
It's not for everyone. Yeah.
It's not for everyone. No. And I guess that's for you guys that are listening, when you see these guys like buyer's agents and real estate agents and all this sort of, you know, the suits and they got the cars and they got all the money and wore a Rolex, whatever you want to imagine that they have, right? You're only ever seeing one aspect. You're not seeing, hey, I'm at my son's football game. I got to step away for an hour and a half and deal with a fucking fire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not seeing all that sort of stuff. And it definitely does take a special person to step in that.
Yeah.
And not only just step in it, but do it successfully for a fucking long period as well.
Yeah, do it consistently and always be on, like, in terms, because again, someone's, you know, when someone's buying a property, say, you know, that's their time is now. So they're nothing else matters.
Yeah.
So I've got to go into that, into their world and go, yeah, I understand. Because if I'm going, it's 9 o'clock, I'm trying to sleep. I do want to get a good night's sleep. I can't do that because I have to be empathetic to that. Because I've done that. Yeah. I've been in their position. It feels like your world's falling apart if something's not going to plan. So again, it does take a specific type of personality to do it. But there's times, and to be fair, like, I don't really actually think about it like that, like in terms of, oh, I've got to work tonight. Like last night, I was up until 8:30, 9 o'clock working on a deal, a negotiation, and it's still going.
But that's the thing. It's not work. Like for you, like it's obviously work, but it's not one of those things where you clock in and out. It's
a lifestyle. I absolutely love it. And that's the thing. I love helping people. Yeah. And I'll help people for free if I can. And that means that I'll give them my time.
Value.
I'll give them my time. If I can give some advice, you know, if they ask for it, then I'll do that. But I think, there's definitely no off button when it comes to this stuff because there's no guidelines. It's not a 9-to-5. And a lot of people want the flashy stuff. But trust me, my wife goes, she made a TikTok the other day of me like walking around the house like on the phone saying, oh, this is what he's like.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that what I'm really like? Because if I'm really like that, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
because like I'm not, sometimes I don't feel like I'm present. Like we're very fortunate. We live in a nice place, in a nice area and all that type of stuff. But sometimes I'm not actually living it up or taking it all in because I'm too busy trying to maintain that. And again, it's my work, but I love it. So it's funny. I think the most important thing is when you get to that point is doing something that you just really enjoy because then it doesn't feel like work. I'm sure for you, there's times when it's tough. You're like, Jesus, this is shit. But ultimately, you like it because you keep rocking up and you've got staff underneath and you're having to help them. So it's just one of those things.
And they say success is just doing the simple things that no one wants to do over and over consistently.
You know what I think no one wants to do? And I've noticed this being in my short time on this earth is that no one likes having uncomfortable conversations. Sorry, mate, it's going to be delayed. Sorry, this has happened. Sorry, you've missed out. Sorry. People try and avoid it because they just don't like doing it. If you can be good at that, everything else will be fine. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. If you're in the car industry, if you're in, as long as you keep people informed and updated and give feedback, that's all everyone wants. It's like going to a restaurant and having a really shit meal. If the waiter or the waitress comes up to you, I'm so sorry, is there anything I can do? You kind of forget about the shit meal because you're like, at least they were really nice about it. But if you have the best meal ever and the guy's turning his nose up at you and he just doesn't give you anything and you've asked for something and he just doesn't come back and then say, oh, you know, that we've run out of that, just forgets to tell you. It's like, oh,
but it's really good food and they're just relying on the good food or the good service, a good result, I should say, then
it ruins the whole experience.
You're always going to remember the fact that waiter or waitress was rude, was a dick or was a bitch.
Yeah.
So if you can always, and my biggest thing, and Simon's taught me this a lot as well and helped me with that, is even if there's nothing to say, just say it. There's nothing to say right now. Mm. Can't give you an update. I'll give people expectations. Mm. I'll speak to you tomorrow.
And it is sort of correct. You guys are sort of the waiters, essentially. If you want to look at what it is, like, you know, it's, and that is true. Like, I don't know how many times me and my wife have sat down at super nice restaurants, and that is so fucking true. Yeah. That one person, that one waiter that's getting $18 an hour, they'll make it or break it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You get a really shit meal.
Yep.
But yet, if that waitress or waiter is fucking fantastic,
doesn't
matter. How
nice was that guy?
Yeah.
And if the tipping thing was big in Australia, everyone would try and be so nice.
Yeah.
But it's them going out of their way more than what they need to.
Mm.
Their job is just to serve you the food. My job is just to buy.
Mm.
Everything else in between, right, is extra. Because you will find, like, with your role in your business and my role in mine, you know, if someone pays you for something, that's the job. I can say, well, my job's just to buy for you.
Mm.
But it's the extra stuff that people remember.
Yeah,
it's the 1% of stuff. And it's the stuff no one really wants to do and have those convos, or even if they're mundane. So you're right. The consistency of doing the small things is important.
Yeah. So your wife now, right?
Yep.
You're a buyer's agent. You live that lifestyle.
Mm.
You know, was that a discussion? Because you said that you met her after your professional football career. Was this a discussion stepping into this? Because I guess that's another avenue that we could go down, is like, not a lot of people talk about, is everyone sees the real estate agents, their glitz and glam on Instagram.
Yeah.
But they never really understand the other side of the fence. No. The wives, the partners, the kids.
You know
what I mean? Is that a conversation that you had with her early in the piece, saying that this is the avenue that we'd like? Was she along for that journey? Has there been struggles with, you know, balance? I hate saying it, the work-life balance. When you are in the fucking, there is no work-life balance.
Shouldn't be. Not even when you're hustling and trying to get somewhere. Yeah,
it all intertwines together.
Great question. I've never been asked that before, but she's involved with everything I do. So we definitely had discussions about what that would look like. And I guess, you know, but she's always been supportive. Bit of my wife, like, she went to uni, did a Bachelor of Journalism and Communications, and now she works for herself, not even doing that. Biggest waste of money on a degree ever, right? I always say, you've got this piece of paper on the wall. Yeah.
It looks fantastic.
Look at that, you know. It's great. $23,000 certificate that we had to pay off to get our place. But anyway.
Yeah, good.
But now she does her own business. So we're very supportive of each other. So I said to her, and she was really good at being a makeup artist, and she was actually making more money being a makeup artist.
Mm.
But not just about the money, she enjoyed it.
Mm.
I backed her and I said, just do that.
Mm.
If it doesn't work out, you can always go back to that piece of paper.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, you're right. Mm. And same with me. Like, you know, I was at a different buyer's agency and I wasn't treated the best.
Mm.
And then I went for less money to where I am now because it was different structure. But she's like, they're good people, go and work for them and then see where it takes you. And it just has gone beyond my wildest dreams how it went. But if she didn't push me, I'd probably be more worried about, well, the other place, I'm making more money.
Mm.
I'm not happy, but I'll sacrifice that to make sure. But so she's always pushing me to do the right thing rather than just the short term, just make the money and just be unhappy.
Mm.
I'm very lucky that we're in a relationship where I back her 100% to work for herself. She backs me 100% to do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is what makes us happy, then amazing. Because if she turned around to me and said, I don't enjoy this anymore of what she does, I'm cool. If that means that she's making less money, I don't care. I just want her to be happy. Because you say work-life balance, it's an annoying thing to say, but it's the small amount of times I do come home when I am off, I don't want to be unhappy. I want to be able to switch off. And if that means just sitting on the lounge and just not even talking, just looking at her, then amazing. So she's very, very supportive with anything I do. Mm. If anything, she gives me too much trust to keep her involved in things. I'm like, what do you think we should do?
Tamara's exactly the same. Sometimes it's like, man, I'm just sending her e-docs, like, just
honestly,
sign
I could
here.
Rob her blind tomorrow and she wouldn't know. But I'm like, I need you to look at what I'm doing here. Even we're getting solar on our house at the moment. I'm like, just letting you know this, how much it's costing. And she goes, I don't care. I'm like, you should care because it's also your money as well.
Yeah.
So she's, look, I love her. She's
Without
her, I wouldn't be as, I guess, invested into this because she's like, look at how much you enjoy it. Just keep going. Because again, if you're not bringing in clients, you're not getting paid.
Mm.
So she's like, just keep going because you have some quiet months. And, you know, November, December kind of dropped off a little bit where we weren't getting clients. And we're going on holidays and we had just bought a house and we got a big mortgage. And I'm like, oh, my God.
You're thinking
like,
you're losing the handle.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, shit, like, what's going on here? And she's like, it's okay, you'll be fine. Let's just go and enjoy, come back. And thankfully, we've been very busy since we've come back. But that's where you need someone to always have you as that supporting.
Yeah. I always joke to Tamara and say to her that she's, you know, she's got the most important job out of everyone because I always say to her that she's my consultant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because those little moments in time where we're sitting on the couch or we're talking about something, I'm always talking to her about key moments, like key things. You know what I mean? Like key pivotal moments or things that I'm stressing about because it's not like the employees and other people, they don't deserve me to put that onto them. So for her, you know, and I always, because she always says to me, oh, I don't feel, like sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, we're moving with so much pace now that sometimes, like, for instance, our Christmas party at the end of the year, she rocked up. She was like gobsmacked, like didn't know anyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was like, fuck, like, you know, every year it's just been like, fuck, she doesn't know. Yeah. So I always just say to her, like, listen, like you play a bigger role than what you think. You know, I go to her with, you know, as you just said, quiet months. You know what I mean? Everyone always sees they always think you're making mad. Like you're really good months and you're doing this, you're doing that. But it's when it's on the low end and you are going traveling or you are doing this, like prime example, I had last year, you know, Nick's aware, we had, I was going away for 3 weeks. I had it in the calendar, it was pre-booked. Everything was sorted, lined up, done. And our key person that was looking after things resigned. They'd think 2 days before I was going on the plane. And I remember saying to her at that point, I was like, listen, like you knew exactly. I said to her, I said like, you knew, but she had her own endeavor. She, you know, and
they think about themselves.
She knew exactly what was happening. And I remember like I thought the world was crashing down. Yeah. I was like, man, I don't even know what she's like. I don't even know where things are at and da 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 da. And thankfully enough, you know, I leaned on her and leaned on guys around me and they were just like, listen, like, if you think that the business is going to fall to its knees in 2-3 weeks, you're dreaming. So they said, just relax. Keep everything going.
Yeah.
Come back to it and fix it when you come back. Like it is not going to
shit
going to shit itself in 2-3 weeks. So, I did that and fucking we're on the other side.
Look, you're still here.
Yeah,
it's still all right.
Yeah. Fast forward to now, you know what I mean? It's a completely different story. We're back rolling again, and we're.
But I think it's really important what you said, like, she's your consultant or he's your consultant, depending, you know, if you're a woman or a guy. So I think that having that anchor at home, and even if it's a friend, right, just having someone that supports you and talks to you about and something you can just be really candid with, and even if it's something stupid or something small, that can just give you some clarity, because we have that many thoughts a day. When you come home, the most important ones come out, or your biggest worries come out.
Always in the quiet moment. When everything's died down,
correct.
You've had a shower, you're just sitting there, and then it starts to come in, and you're like, oh, yeah.
And sometimes, and that's why it's really important. If you, and there are going to be, you know, young blokes or young chicks listening to this that are like coming home to no one. What do we do? It's just about speaking to some. There's always someone, and someone that you trust and confide in, that you can get things off your chest. Because then, when you say it out loud, it doesn't seem like it's such a big thing. Because you'll get a different perspective from someone else, because you think, like you said, the world's crashing, but to someone else with something similar going on in their life, they're like, big deal. It's okay. You can find someone else. We are all replaceable. I'm very lucky that I've got Demi to be, she's my biggest supporter. Yeah.
And when you have a partner, like whether it's a guy or a girl, like you, if they're ride or die and they're going to like die on that hill with you, it's like the easiest thing. You know what I mean? I don't know how many times I've told her like, wait, this is going to be a little bit risky. Like, I don't know what we're getting into here. And then like, she'd just be like, hey, whatever happens, happens. Like we got to sell everything. We'll sell it. Like, it'll be fine. And like, it's just like, it sounds so stupid, but in that moment, like just hearing someone else say that or whatever, it's just like, fuck it, like let's go.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Let's it gives you that. Like, that's that extra push that you need. Yeah. You didn't even think you needed, because you got to make that decision. Yeah. But you kind of needed that little bit of an inkling to just go, okay, I can do it.
Mm.
It was prime example. Last year in July, we weren't thinking of buying a bigger place. Mm. We're comfortable in our place. Was happy, and a place came up, and I knew that we could get. I knew we could sell. The problem right now is people know that they can sell, but they don't know where to go. I found somewhere where I wanted to go, and I said to Demi, I just came home. I said, I think we got to sell. I think we should sell.
Mm.
And she's like, what? I said, get the house ready. I'm going to get a Form 6 signed. We're going to sell our place and we're going to move on. And she was like, she thought about it. She goes, all right, if that's what you want to do, if you think that's the right thing to do, then I'll do it. Because she's like, you know that better than me, so cool. But if she said to me in that moment, no, like, because I know what she's like, she's very easygoing, but she said, no, I'm happy here. We wouldn't have done it.
Mm.
But I just needed that little bit of a thing from her to say, yeah, okay, I trust you. Let's just do it.
Mm.
I'll go. I'm going to trust you and what you know here. Mm. You know, I just needed that to push us into where we are now, which allows us to now have the next stage of our life start, you know, when we're going to start trying for kids and all that type of stuff. Because that was the reason why. It wasn't just for the sake of it to say, oh, look at me, I've got a better place. It was to go, all right, when the time comes to have a kid, I don't want an objection of, oh, now we got to move and it's all happening at once. I'm kind of thinking of the longer term, like, okay, there's a lot more money to live here.
Mm.
It's a big move, but if we do this, then when we have kids, it's one less thing to worry about.
Mm.
You can just focus on the important stuff. Because realistically, it's not that important. We could have stayed with where we were at, but, and again,
doesn't it also, wait, there's one topic I want to, I'll touch on.
Yeah.
But I'll go back to it after this. Like talking about, because it's the same thing that I've had a massive, you know, I go through it constantly. And I'm thankful enough I've got guys in and around me that are very good at, you know, pushing me even when I don't really want to be pushed. But the common thing of, you know, when you over, I would say, step outside your comfort zone, especially with purchasing a bigger house you know, to put it in more context, if you guys are looking about getting a loan for a car or a bigger trailer or more guys, more stuff, it's all same shit, right?
Yeah.
You're really stretching yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, you're stretching yourself thin, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, but in the moment, that's what you think. But then the funny thing happens is in 6-12 months, you look back and you're like, what was I even worried about? You know what I mean? I've increased my pay. I've been able to bring in more work. I've been able to do X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
Like it makes it for a bigger life. And I think without that stretchiness of you stretching yourself, if you stayed in that house that you stayed in, would you have really pushed as hard as what you've pushed?
No.
Exactly.
Your back's up against the wall. And I always say this to anyone, that if I'm speaking to people who are in my position that are the same age or someone thinking about getting into real estate or even anything really, is if your back's up against the wall and you've got like real responsibilities, right, where you need to make payments on things and smart things to help you with work or whatever or life, you will make it work.
Mm.
You have no choice. And people don't realize how much of a mental thing that is. That your mentality shifts and you're like,
you shift well, I've got it from no being choice. Scared. To scared having, to
action, right? Yeah. It's just a fear to then going, well, I'm going to put that fear out there and just challenge that and be uncomfortable. Because again, you don't grow, same old cliche, you don't grow unless you're uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's true,
right?
You don't, and that's where the best people, again, they put themselves, as you always hear it, they're on the verge of going bankrupt, you know, with Tesla.
And then
Tesla was on the verge of being bankrupt, but unless he did what he did, he wouldn't be where he is now. Mm. Or, and exactly right, like guys in business, oh, I really need that extra truck, or I really need that extra, you know, that extra person to help. Am I going to be able to afford their wage? You just have to bite the bullet and do it, because obviously, if you're at that point and you're thinking that and you're worried about the pay, you just got to think about how much more money you're going to make. And again, it kind of figures itself out, but again, it's always hindsight. You look back and go, "Oh, that was."
What was I worried about?
But then you got another worry. It's something else. Always something.
Yeah.
But I think when your back's up against the wall, it really, you've got two choices: either just you stay there or you just come out swinging. Mm. And when you come out swinging, you always come out better off. Mm. So,
and I feel like it's a very not dangerous, but like for me, that's been on this massive, like, you know, fuck, you go from like 2 staff to 20. Like it.
How do you do that? Man?
You just like it's a massive mindset shift. And it's almost to the point where you get a little bit too far the other way of comfortable taking risk, where you almost
too optimistic. Yeah.
Exactly. Where it's like, what did Tamara say to me the other day? Like, there's a big difference between being optimistic and being delusional. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, and it's riding that fine line, because you have to be optimistic, but you don't want to be delusional. Delusional means bankrupt. You're on the street. So it's riding that line. And that's a line that I struggle with, because at the moment I'm towing each side. I'm a little bit delusional,
but I think
I'm a little optimistic.
To go forward, you need to be like that. And that's why you hear of people that go get super wealthy, they lose it all and they come back.
Yeah.
Because they're able to step on that delusion line. And sometimes they just take a step too far.
Yeah.
But you learn by making those mistakes. But agreed. Yeah. It's I've never heard someone say it's a exactly with those words, optimistic and delusional.
Yeah.
But there has to be, you have to set yourself goals. I think the biggest thing is setting yourself goals. Realistic and unrealistic. Unrealistic, but what I like to do is I set myself an unrealistic goal because then I work towards being I have to work to get to that point and then I'll hit a realistic goal. So in the back of my mind, I know what the real is, but unless I set myself a goal higher that's unrealistic, I won't work like I'm working unrealistic.
We can go down the rabbit hole of goal setting and stuff. That's a massive thing for me. But
you have to.
Anyway, it's like, you got like, anyway, I'm not going to go into my conspiracies of vision boards and shit like that, but hey, that's for another discussion. But we're getting to the end of it. I've just got a few, like, there's one question that's been on the back of, in my mind about you, Demi, I think your wife's name
is. Yes.
Yep. So talk to me. Have no kids at the moment.
No.
Do you ever worry about when the kids do come, how you're going to be able to manage
yes.
the work, the kids, be there for Demi and all that sort of stuff? Is that a stressor? Because like, for me, that when I had my second daughter, Georgie, that was a pivotal moment for me in time, because when you have the second, it's no longer, you know, you as the father need to be a lot more on. You know, we're not right. Everyone can preach what they want. Or back in the 80s, you know what I mean? The parents stayed home.
Yeah.
It's not like that anymore.
No.
It's not like that. Right? We're in 2025. Right. So it's definitely not like that anymore. So, you know, but for you, is that something that ever goes through your mind? And massively, you know,
yeah, massively. Like, I, so, you know, Simon, you know, he's got three boys and he likes to say, like, we like to joke around and say that that's my contraception every time I see him. Is that he's like, see, don't have kids.
Yeah.
But it is, it's a big thing. Like, you know,
because obviously you want to have kids.
100%. Like, it's something, again, I think it's our job to have kids. Come from a beautiful family, and so does Demi. And again, we want to have kids, and the biggest concern is definitely the time. And I think we're a bit more lucky because again, she doesn't have a 9-to-5, and hopefully we get at that point where she doesn't need to work. But even if she does, again, she works from home, so it's a bit different. And I can be a bit flexible, and Simon's understanding of that, and we can make it all work all together. But yeah, it's time and money. You know, it's not cheap to have a kid, and I think I saw something, and it might sound wrong, but I kind of get it. It's like not enough of the right people are having kids and too much of the wrong people are having kids. And it's not the right thing to say. It sounds bad, but if at face value, it's bad. But if you look at it, the people who are not wanting to have kids or really thinking about it, the ones that are just really worried about giving them the best that they can, where sometimes you've got to take a bit of a page out of someone else's book and go, well, so-and-so doesn't have it nearly as much as me, but they've got three kids and they make it work. But of course, time, it's very valuable, and I want to be able to be there and not have to be on the phone at 9 o'clock. But I think it's just setting boundaries, mate. I think you've just got to get to a point where you go, no, look, I'm going to set boundaries. What's urgent, what's not? But yeah, definitely it goes through my mind every day as I'm getting a bit older that, you know, when's going to be the right time and how are we going to do it? But I think if it came now, you make it work. You back us up against the wall. You've got no choice, man. But
now, this was a saying that my old man gave me, you know what I mean, when I was younger. And I love kids. You know, I want to have way more kids. It's definitely, you know, I love them. But he always used to say there is no bad time to have a kid. You know, there's better times than others, but there is absolutely no bad time.
Yeah, makes sense.
And talking about when your back's up against the wall, and this is back to, as you said, time and money. I'm a strong believer in, and don't get me wrong, there's obviously people out there that have got more kids, like whatever. But for me, I've always thought that, hey, if someone's going to have 4 or 5 kids or 3 kids or whatever, they're going to have to earn more than...
They've got no choice.
They've got no choice. It pushes like someone like myself, if I have another kid tomorrow... It's going to fucking push me to go from 20 to 100.
Yeah.
Like, and that's almost like a drive for me where if I didn't, like, I always joke to my, if I didn't have my first daughter, would I have really had the drive to grow the business and do what I've done and purchase the properties and maybe not. I don't know. Like, I personally, I don't think so because I was chilled. I was just like, life's good.
Life's good. Yeah. But then income, it's sick.
Exactly. Yeah. But then when you have a kid, you're like, now I've got to actually think, not just for me, but for my kids. And then when you have the second one, you're like, okay, well, now I've got one. Now I need more. So then it's like, you have to like, your back is up against the wall and you just got
to
keep pushing.
And that's the thing, I don't want to have to think about, and I guess no one does, no one wants to think about the finances, the financial, I guess, not a problem, but the financial things that come with having a kid. And I want to limit that, not obliviate it, because you're not going to. It's going to be, for me, putting ourselves in a bit more of a comfortable position where I can say to Demi, it's okay, just look after the boy or the girl if we're lucky enough to have to have kids. But definitely that's the mindset. And I think that, like I said, I think there's never a right time or never a wrong time. It's just about whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
But we're married. We're at the point where we can. We've got a house. We've got all the things that we need. So, yeah.
This year.
Maybe one more trip or something. But everyone always says that, I'll go on one more trip. But
we travel with both our kids.
See, that's the thing. Like I said that to Demi. Like, let's go for a trip with the kid. Who cares?
Tamara used to, like, we used to always have family friends that'd be like, oh, because we love travel, right? We go away like twice a year. We got a big trip this year. But that's a passion that me and her share. We love to fucking travel all the time. And
I think it's important.
Her friends and family, like, used to always say, oh, once you have kids, You'll never travel.
People say that, and I'm like, you pigeonholed yourself there because maybe you don't do that, but I would like to do that. And then I see.
Don't get me wrong, it's hard. It's hard. But prime example, last year we went twice, both kids took them. In the moment, it's difficult. It's a different sort of trip, though. And we've built the best memories possible, you know, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And we'll continue to do that year on year.
Where did you go?
So we went last year, we went Fiji and Japan. The year before that, we went to America and I think New Zealand. This year, we're going 6 weeks. We're going road tripping with both the girls from east to west doing the States.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So it's a massive trip.
That's massive.
Yeah. So,
that's cool, bud.
Yeah. Mark my words when this comes out. It'll be, So it's a big trip like that has been something in the works for a couple of years. Because as being a business owner, you know what I mean? When you step away for so long,
it's hard.
You can use, like, I've, in my line of work anyway, and what I've done, it's, I usually know that about that 3 week mark, not so much itching to get back, but it's more just like you can start to find the holes in what's missing when you're not there.
Yes.
So for me, my one target this year is like when we go away for that extended period, I want to be able to come back to it just sustained, because I've always been each to their own, but I've always been a strong believer in that a business isn't a business until it can run without you. And for what it is,
you're right.
You're just an employee.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You're playing a role. You haven't actually built the business up to sustain itself.
Yes.
So for me, that's always been in the back of my mind. And I'm not saying I'm there yet. I definitely don't plan. I'm not trying to rush it.
But the only way you know is if you're not there.
Exactly.
And to give it a go and try it out.
That's exactly right. Yep. So, but anyway, that's,
maybe travel. So for me, one more trip. We just came back from Europe and we went skiing, and I'm seeing all these little kids skiing. I'm like, it'd actually be fun if we could just bring...
Yeah.
We can bring our kid here and we can do it again. But
best memories. Yeah. We always joke, we're like, I couldn't even imagine traveling now without the kids. It's like the fun part of them being there is everything that we do. Yeah.
But that's cool. That's what I want.
So, all right. One last question that I've got. If money wasn't a part of the equation, what would you classify as success?
Being happy, honestly, it's so corny and cliche, but it is being happy. I don't define success with money. I just defined it with being able to rock up with a smile and just be pleasant. Like, if you're not pleasant and you're a millionaire, no one wants to be around you, man. No, you're just a dick. But if you're a nice guy and you're always having a good time, then that's what happens to a lot of people. Some people are just so jovial that they're in their own world and but that's what I strive for. Like, being happy and carefree. Money out of it, just, I'm very lucky that so young I found something, and not everyone has this, where you find something that you're not only good at but you enjoy and that pays well. But even if it didn't pay well, I would still do it. And that's why I was an athlete at the start, because I enjoyed it so much. I didn't care. And again, playing in the A-League is a testament to that. It doesn't matter how much you earn.
That's it.
It's just, I was doing it because I loved it.
And the physicality of it as well. Yeah. Like the demand of it. Like, looking back, and I'm like, you're not on millions and millions.
I was like, that was like borderline legal, what I was making. But I did it because I loved it. So just being happy. And that's what I always strive to do. And I'll teach my kids one day, is just do what makes you happy. Money will take care of itself. And because again, you know, if you live for someone else, like if you live for your partner or your kids, you just want them to see you happy. And so in that way they're happy. Because if they always see you stressed and angry and whatever, well, they're just going to think that as well. So, and that love that a family has, that's important.
Yeah. And I guess for the guys that are listening that are in their utes or on their way to work and, you know, they're saying, oh, it's easy for us to say we're sitting here. Let me just say, like, it's, you might not be happy right now in the sort of aspect of line of work that you're in or you're doing long hours, et cetera, et cetera. But you need it, and it's something that I've lived by. You need to find the happiness in what you do. So, you know, not everyone's going to be able to find their best job, or they're going to be able to be like, oh, this is my calling. I live and die by this.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, when I was digging holes or removing shitty toilets and stuff like that, I'd still find the joy in my day-to-day, like joking with the guys, having a laugh with the client.
At least you're making money. At least you've got a job. Exactly. At least like, you can walk. You know at least what I mean? You can dig a hole.
And that's the thing, because a lot of guys, they sit there and they beat themselves up because they're like, oh, I'm just not happy and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can be in the constant pursuit to find something that's happy. Take it from me. There's days that I work, and it would be the same with you, that it's not all lollipops and rainbows. I do not get home every single day and think, oh, this is the best day of my life. I can't see myself doing anything else, right? There's definitely been times along my journey where I've sat on the edge of my bed, having cold sweats, thinking, fuck, it'd be a lot easier just to go and work for someone for, you know, the same money that I'm getting at the moment, which is fucking zero, right? So don't get me wrong. Just when you're in those moments, just keep it going, but you need to find the joy.
It's a small thing. It's a one percenters. Yeah. It's a one. Again, like I always just look at how lucky we are just to, like I look at my brother. My brother's autistic. He will never have a life that I have. He'll never have a life that a normal person has. He'll never probably have a spouse. So to have someone and to be able to go out and have a normal conversation or just do little things, like that's what he wants. He just wants to be normal. Like I say it. He just wants to hang around normal people because that's what he wants. So just being able to walk, just being able to talk.
Yeah.
And there's people who are deaf, who are mute. Like just being able to be here and have the, and again, the rest is up to you, but just being able to do that, that's the most important thing, man. Like
perspective.
It's perspective. Like, and again, it's very easy to get caught up in money and work and, you know, oh, what's your biggest problem? Oh, so-and-so didn't get this job, or this is a bit of a nightmare. And yeah, that's fine. But what's perspective? Like, again, people would die to be in that position, to have that as their problem.
Yeah.
You know, not be hungry. And again, I'm getting on, like sounding like I'm, you know, talking about world peace, but I'm just being honest about, you know, again, it is perspective. Because again, you can just look in your own backyard here in like, you know, in Brisbane, there are people struggling.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a ute and you can get to work without catching public transport, you've won.
Yeah.
If you can dig a hole and you've got a job as a plumber, you've won.
Yeah.
Like people, there's always someone who wishes that they were you.
Yeah.
You always wish you were someone else, but again, just go back in the line and go think about where you are and go, actually, I'm quite lucky. And then only good things will happen. Because if you're saying, oh, I don't want this job, I don't want this, I don't want, you're only going to attract that you don't want shit. But if you go, well, I'm glad I've got this and I just want this to happen next, I just want to keep growing, you will. But I just think that people don't take the small things and they don't take them as wins. They are all wins. Those big, like those small things are massive. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's about it. This is a good one. So I hope you guys, Emilio, I want to thank you again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man.
It went very quick. And Yeah.
Fuck.
I know. So, but yeah, no, I hope you guys got a little bit of advice, some insight into myself a little bit more. And Emilio, man, thank you again for coming on. It was... it's actually a really good one. Yeah. So thank you.
Anytime, I'm always available. I love having a chat. So, all
right. Sweet. All right, guys. We will see you on the next one. Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.